Chapter 5. On the following Tuesday, Andrew met the President by appointment at the Marble Arch. Until he had received his final instructions, he was pledged not to begin, and he had passed these two intervening days staring at his empty fireplace. They shook hands silently and passed into the park. The President was always thoughtful in a crowd. "In such a gathering as this," said Andrew, pointing an imaginary pistol at a lecturer on socialism, "you could hardly go wrong to let fly." "You must not speak like that," the President said gently, "or we shall soon lose you. Your remark, however, opens the way for what I have to say. You have never expressed any curiosity as to your possible fate. I hope this is not because you underestimate the risks. If the authorities saw you letting fly, as you term it, promiscuously, or even at a given object, they would treat you as no better than a malefactor." "I thought that all out yesterday," said Andrew, "and I am amazed at the Society's success in escaping detection." "I feared this," said the President. "You are mistaken. We don't always escape detection. Sometimes we are caught."
"Caught?"
"Yes, and hanged."
"But if that is so, why does it not get into the papers?"
"The papers are full of it." Andrew looked incredulous. "In the present state of law," said the President, "motive in a murder goes for nothing. However iniquitous this may be, and I do not attempt to defend it, we accept it as a fact. Your motives may have been unexceptionable, but they hang you all the same. Thus our members, when apprehended, preserve silence on this point, or say that they are Fenians. This is to save the Society. The man who got 15 years the other day for being found near St. Stephen's with 6 infernal machines in his pockets was really one of us. He was taking them to be repaired."
"And the other who got 10 years the week before?"
"He was from America, but it was for one of our affairs that he was sentenced. He was quite innocent. You see, the dynamiters, vulgarly so called, are playing into our hands. Suspicion naturally falls on them. He was our 5th.
"I had no idea of this," murmured Andrew.
"You see what a bad name does," said the President. "Let this be a warning to you, Andrew."
"But is this quite fair?"
"As for that, they like it. The leading spirits, I mean. It gives them a reputation. Besides, they hurt as well as help us. It was after their appearance that the authorities were taught to be distrustful. You have little idea of the precautions taken nowadays. There is Sir William Harcourt, for instance, who is attended by policemen everywhere. I used to go home from the house behind him nightly, but I could never get him alone. I have walked in the very shadow of that man, but always in company."
"You were never arrested yourself?" asked Andrew.
"I was once, but we substituted a probationer."
"Then did he? Was he?"
"Yes, poor fellow."
"Is that often done?"
"Sometimes. You perhaps remember the man who went over the embankment the night we met. Well, if I had been charged with that, you would have had to be hanged."
Andrew took a seat to collect his thoughts.
"Was that why you seemed to take to me so much?" he asked wistfully. "It was only one reason," said the President soothingly. "I liked you from the first."
"But I don't see," said Andrew, "why I should have suffered for your action."
For the moment, his veneration of this remarkable man hung in the balance.
"It would have been for the Society's sake," said the President simply.
"Probationers are hardly missed." His face wore a pained look, but there was no reproach in his voice. Andrew was touched. He looked the apology which, as a Scotchman, he could not go the length of uttering. "Before I leave you today," said the President, turning to a pleasanter subject, "I shall give you some money. We do not, you understand, pay our probationers a fixed salary."
"It is more, is it not," said Andrew, "in the nature of a scholarship?"
"Yes, a scholarship, for the endowment of research. You see, we do not tie you down to any particular line of study. Still, I shall be happy to hear of any programme you may have drawn up."
Andrew hesitated. He did not know that to the President he was an open book.
"I dare say I can read your thoughts," said his companion. "There is an eminent person whom you would like to make your first?" Andrew admitted that this was so.